Welcome to the Inspired Professional Podcast, a place where you can listen to some incredible people talk about their stories of making a career change. In each episode, I'll be asking them how they made their move, when they decided it was the right time, and they'll also be giving some advice to those of you who've been thinking about making a change but don't know where to start. I'm your host, Kathleen, and let's get to it. Hello, and thanks for tuning in to another episode. I'm back! Yes, I know I said that on the last one, and that was quite some time ago, and I've definitely turned into one of those people who say that they're back and then don't come back and then disappear for months on end. My bad. Needless to say, life has been a little bit busy, but thank you to everyone who has continued to listen to the podcast, and I really appreciate all of your support. Please leave a rating and subscribe to the podcast if you've enjoyed listening. Now, I hope you're all doing well, and let's get on to today's one. I initially discovered today's guest on social media after finding out about her app, Kiroku. I'm excited to introduce Dr. Hannah Burrow. Hannah is the CEO and co-founder at Kiroku. Kiroku uses AI to automate the least rewarding parts of work, and their first market is dentistry, where dentists spend 25% of their day writing clinical notes. Prior to starting Kiroku 3.5 years ago, she worked as a dentist, having had roles in practices, hospitals, and Public Health England. Here is our chat. Hi, Hannah. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. I'm really thrilled for you to be on here, and I can't wait to speak to you about your journey.
Thank you for having me.
So I guess I wanted to start off by asking you if you could introduce yourself briefly and sort of give us an update as to what you're doing at the moment.
So I am Hannah. I am one of the founders of a company called Kiroku. I'm a dentist by qualification, so qualified about 7 years ago from Bristol in the UK, and worked in several different clinical jobs. So worked in practice, both NHS and private, worked in hospitals, doing community dentistry, different areas of hospital dentistry, and I also did some public health as well. And really found that a kind of mixture of clinical roles very enjoyable. I really, really enjoyed it, but I just found so much of my time as a clinician was spent not doing the thing I trained to do, and was spent doing the work around the work, staring at computer screens and things like that, which were far less rewarding. And so that led me to consider how technology could be applied to make life easier for the dentist, and hopefully better for the patient as well. And so I then started the company Kiroku about 3.5 years ago with my co-founder Jay. And what Kiroku does is it is technology which automates clinical admin, so clinical record keeping for dentists and the letter writing and patient communications that we all have to do. Much of that feels quite repetitive quite often. And so I think being able to kind of free up that repetitive time so the dentist can focus on the parts of the job they love and hope, and the parts of job that require sort of creative thinking. And so that's what I'm doing right now.
That's incredible. I want to take a bit of a step back into your life as a dentist and sort of delve into what made you choose dentistry in the first place.
I think I was stronger at sciences, so kind of had it just in my head that therefore that meant medicine as the obvious choice. I was pretty limited in my worldview, and I think I had grown up watching medical dramas, including Scrubs, and assumed that's what the life of a doctor would be like. So I think that was much of the thought process. And I then did my work experience, which was arranged by my school at the time in a hospital, and I found it really upsetting because I was on a ward that had just obviously what you would expect in a hospital, typically older people, very ill, and I found that far harder to cope with than I thought I would. But my school had also arranged work experience in a dental practice, which I just kind of went along for the fun of it. I didn't really think a huge amount in advance of that week. But I just loved it. I think I was very lucky in where I was placed because the chap that I was observing was just a really sort of fun, silly dentist, and he was very much took fun in what he did. And so I think it was a really enjoyable week, but I just really liked the creativity that goes into dentistry and that you really, there is a huge element of artistry to it. And I think kind of watching that really kind of inspired me that that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, that's really incredible. I think one of the things that I find interesting is hearing how you feel that dentistry is quite creative, because I think most people who I suppose aren't dentists probably wouldn't look at dentistry as being a creative career. Sort of what did you find dentistry to be like when you started working, and what were some of the aspects that you found great and what were the aspects that you found challenging about the job?
I really, really enjoyed working as a dentist. And you know, for the first few years, when you graduate within the UK, you do your VTE year, your vocational training year. And then I did a year in hospitals as well after that. And then I just went into general practice. And in each of those roles, I absolutely loved the variety of, you know, seeing a huge number of patients in a day, being able to chat to lots of different people, but also that kind of taking pride in creating, fixing. I don't know, I really, really did enjoy that. And I also found that the challenge of graduating and probably seeing, what, two patients a day at university and then, you know, stepping that up, I really did enjoy that. I didn't see that as something that stressed me out. I really loved kind of speeding up and taking that into my stride. So they were the things I really loved about it. The things I didn't love, quite evidently from what I've gone on to do, was actually the amount of time we were lectured as dental students, but also postgraduate dentists as well. You know, that we are going to get sued and you need to include this amount of detail in your records, but no, it just felt like no amount of information was ever enough. And that did stress me out, that feeling of wanting to spend all of my time actually just engaging in conversation with a patient, but that actually not being possible because, you know, I had to be writing up my notes as I was going along, and I had to be ensuring that, you know, that the organization around it was all done well as well. And I think that felt frustrating. And I think also this is, I think when I had my first job within, you know, my first sort of permanent long-term associate job, I think I did feel a little bit panicked by it. It was the element, I think as a dentist, you graduate on a really fantastic salary when you compare it to your kind of contemporaries. But equally, the job that you graduated into remains quite similar, or can remain quite similar for much of your career if you let it. And yes. I think I was sort of 6 months, which is, I mean, a baby, 6 months into this like permanent job, basically. And I think I was just suddenly like, oh my gosh, I could be doing this forever. And I think that inspired me as well. And so, yeah, I think, you know, the benefits of variety, I think, is what felt like it was lacking in that. And I think that probably, that panic is what, to an extent, made me think, how about doing something a little bit different? And that's how I ended up down this route.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think where you've ended up is so different and yet still seen as something, I suppose, lateral in your shift towards what you've done, because, I mean, of course, you are in the technology space now in creating what you've created, but also it's still largely relevant to dentistry in the startup phase as you focused mostly on dentists. Now, I want to ask you sort of how you got into actually creating Kuroku. So the very start of that journey, how many years out were you from dental school, and how did it all start?
So actually it was before even graduating from dental school, but I suppose the first inkling of an idea happened. And that happened when I was at dental school. I was working on an oral surgery clinic, And I had a patient who said to me, I have been, I have been brushing my teeth. I've been doing everything that my dentist asked me to do for my entire life. And why am I here basically having X number of teeth taken out? And I didn't have an answer for him. And I think that made me think, okay, obviously there's an issue with how information is being communicated between the dentist and the patient. And, you know, over a lifetime, evidently you're seeing more than one dentist. So it's, you know, that could either worsen or make better the situation, who knows, depending on what dentist you get. But there's an inconsistency there. And that started making me think about how information could be provided to patients in a more consistent way. And so in my VT year, I built a very, very basic application that was essentially just a library of information. Oh, you know, we're about to take your tooth out. What can you expect at your next appointment? Oh, you know, your dentist has prescribed you root canal treatment. What does that mean? And it would basically be whilst I was typing up my clinical notes, I would give them this iPad, my own iPad that I'd built this application on, and they would just go through this course, and at the end they would fill in data about how they found it, how it was different from what they'd experienced previously. And that, I suppose, was the kind of entry point, because I then, for my kind of first couple of years in clinical or sort of post-graduation, I would work during the day, and then in the evening I would go to like 2 health tech talks a week. And so I'd meet loads of different people. And, you know, at this point I lived in London, so I had huge, exposure to loads of different talks like that. And I suppose that just kind of gradually, it just filled me with more and more confidence that as a clinician, you could do that, because I would hear doctors speak about creating, you know, technologies to be able to diagnose problems with the retina in situations or environments where like huge cameras aren't possible and things. I don't know, just really, you saw really amazing stuff. And it just gave me a little bit more confidence that this is a possible route for a clinician. But I still didn't know. I mean, I didn't have any real background in startup ecosystem. I didn't know how I would go about starting a business or anything like that. So at that point, I started looking for accelerator programs. So there's quite a lot in the UK. There's quite a lot in the US. They're international. But I was looking at some of the big ones and thinking, I wonder if this would be a good fit. Like trying to fill in these applications and spending my weekends doing it, but not quite sure if I was doing the right thing here. And eventually I applied to a program called EF, Entrepreneur First in the UK. And with each sort of round of application that I got through, I got more and more invested into it. So by the time that they offered me a position on their program, it felt like a no-brainer to hand in my notice to the practice I was working at and give that a go. And to talk about the panic earlier as well, I think I was just so scared. I thought, if I don't do this now, I'm going to become reliant on a dentist salary and I'm never going to do it. So I almost felt like that could limit me. So I was like, do this now. If it doesn't work, no problem. I'll go back to dentistry 6 months later. And so that was genuinely was what I told myself. I was like, it's fine. I'll be doing dentistry in 6 months, but let's give this thing a go. And so that I went through that program and then met Jay, and then we founded Kuroku together.
That's amazing. How many years postgraduate were you when you handed your notice in?
Three.
Wow.
Just over three. Yeah, it wasn't long.
Relatively early on.
Yeah, definitely.
That's crazy. And did you feel... I'm just sort of imagining how you must have felt, but did you feel really out of place in this particular accelerator program? Because I can't imagine that there would be that many dentists applying for these things.
I think I was the only dentist who'd ever applied at that point. I think quite a few have applied since. I'm not sure, you know, what's happened with that. But there was quite a few doctors on the program, and I think that felt like that made me feel a little bit like, okay, you know, there's someone similar to me here. But I remember, no, absolutely, I felt like, talk about imposter syndrome. A lot of the people in this program are technically, you know, they've got a PhD in AI and in like different areas, more specifically, obviously, areas of AI. And I found that quite quite, you know, intimidating. I remember the first kind of time I sat down with someone, they said, oh, what were you doing before you started the program? I was like, oh, you know, I'm a dentist. So I was working clinically till, you know, Friday. And I was like, what about you? And they're like, oh, you know, I was analyzing satellite images of Darfur to see if we could apply computer vision to analyze, you know, what was going on. And I was like, whoa.
Oh my goodness.
I was literally seeing like a family of children to do their like the dentistry. It just felt so different. But gradually, as I went through the program, you realize that, you know, there's these very, very incredible, bright people who've got an area of technology, but ultimately the thing that they need is a problem to solve. So actually the people who knew a domain really well did have a strength there, for sure. You know, inevitably each type of person had a strength, but that's what I could bring to the table. And so when me and Jay started working together, I'd really kind of dug deep into what dentists were spending their time on and what they didn't want to be doing. And funnily enough, you know, as I said, I was initially looking into how you would provide educational material to patients. And so that was the kind of idea I had in my head. So I would go out and interview loads of dentists and I'd be like, what's the thing that you're spending most of your time on that you don't like doing? And repeatedly they would say, you know, notes, 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 hate writing notes. And I was like, are you sure it's not giving patients
are you sure it's not this problem that I've been thinking of for the last couple of years? Please be this problem.
That was exactly it. So eventually, you know, enough dentists were like, no, it's definitely notes that I absolutely hate. And by that point, I had kind of learned a bit more about the technical skill sets of the people that were in the program with me. And I'd learned about natural language processing, which is an area of AI, which is teaching computers to understand language. And I realized that this problem of note-taking that we as dentists have to kind of deal with day in, day out, there is technical solutions to areas of that. And so that's when me and Jay were like, here is this area of research that he'd been working on, and here is this problem. And so, yeah, Kuroku was born.
Yeah, the growth sounds incredibly organic as to how it came about. I mean, I think your shift sort of laterally into the technology space but still sort of related to dentistry is interesting, because it seems like it was born out of a desire to solve a problem within the profession, as opposed to, I suppose, you being like, you know what, I like AI, let me try for a career in AI. And so how did people react when you were sort of pursuing something that is quite out of the box for a dentist?
Sort of, I suppose, firstly, my family's reaction was incredibly supportive. You know, my mum basically was like, you are in a fantastic position. You have got dentistry, which is a career you love, that earns you good money if you want it, and that won't go anywhere. So, like, explore what you want to explore. I remember my dad went, shortest dental career ever. But I mean, I say that, but then so supportive since. But I remember initially was like, wow, took 3 years after 5 years of dental school. But then I think friends, like my friends who are dentists, I think probably a little bit perplexed, but in, you know, in not in any negative way, but just like, oh, wow, okay, you're doing something a bit different. But by that point, quite a few of my friends were staying in hospitals and doing sort of max vax positions and things like that. So it wasn't unusual that of my friend group, a lot of my dental friends weren't doing standard dental jobs. And then reaction of dentists when we came out to actually sort of speaking to dentists to get their feedback on this. Again, I'd say really supportive, because you know, I'd speak to lots of different dentists, whether it's dentists that worked in practices I used to work in or people I'd come across at courses and things like that. And people were just happy to give you their time to give you their experience of things. And that's what I was asking for at the time. But when you consider that dentists are very busy people, you know, people were so happy to give me that time to chat and give their two cents on things.
Yeah, that's so great that you had such a positive reaction to your transition.
No, really lucky.
Speaking of your positive experiences. Yeah. What have been some of the biggest hurdles during the course of a startup like Heroku that you've been working on, and how have you managed to overcome them? Because I can only imagine the really high highs and the really low lows that you've probably been experiencing.
Completely. The high highs and the low lows couldn't, like, no words could sum it up better. I think, so in the early days, the way that we first initially wanted to solve the problem was from voice. So could you have, like, an Alexa in a dental surgery that listens to the conversation and generates notes for the dentist? And so for the first sort of year and a half of Heroku, that's pretty much entirely what we were working on. And for a huge number of different reasons, that was hugely challenging. And that was, you know, if you can think of sort of suction in a dental surgery, the noises that are in a dental surgery, just the quality of the audio coming through was not always consistent. So even when I look at what Jay had actually built in terms of the NLP, it was absolutely exceptional. Like, what it could bring out when you had fantastic quality audio and transcription going through, it could output something very, very impressive. But we weren't always able to get that. And if you couldn't get that first kind of chunk of the technical journey, then the rest was kind of pointless. And that coupled with various other things. So, and I'll touch on two of them. One is the fact that as a dentist, we have quite a specific way of doing things. So even though we're all broadly following a structure with our clinical notes, people might word things differently. The order of things might be different. And that is important to them because they have a flow that they follow. And so us kind of outputting this one standard didn't kind of solve that problem for people. And so that was hugely challenging. And then the other thing was, as clinicians, you know, if something's not working 100%, we're not going to use it. And as we shouldn't,
that's right.
You know, because it's not serving our patients. And so if you've got this AI and you're relying on it entirely to do your notes, otherwise you're duplicating your work, and it's not always working 100%, even if it's working, you know, next to kind of state of the art, it's working very, very well, it's not good enough in a clinical setting. And so for all of these reasons, we made a decision to, what was initially, we considered it, and I'm doing speech marks, which you can't see, but in speech marks, we called it this onboarding product. And we created essentially templates, but with really good UI. And so you could click through what was going on, and you could click your notes into it from that. And from that, the output we wanted was to learn more about the individual dentist so that when we onboard them onto the voice, it's already customized to them. But what we realized was we had a product that people loved in its own right. But that to get to that point took us a year and a half, I think, longer perhaps. And so for a year and a half, what we were doing was we would killing ourselves trying to create a product that people weren't able to engage with because of the problems I've just described to you. And what that feels like as the founder is just panic that you aren't doing things well enough and panic that you're spending your time on the wrong things. You don't see it externally as the issues with the process that can be fixed. It's so easy as the founder to think, this is my fault, I'm not doing things well enough. And so I say all of those things because until you had that feedback from your customers, you weren't getting feedback because you were the boss. And so you had no way of knowing whether you were doing well or not. And that was really challenging for me. And I really, really did struggle with that. And then as soon as we got that kind of stuff, we figured out, okay, this is what people want. Okay, they're not asking for voice anymore. This is what they want. And we made that decision actually, which was really quite hard at the start of 2020. God, I forget what year we're in. About 2020, we made the decision to kind of, okay, we're moving away from voice. That was quite a difficult one because obviously we were quite attached to that idea in the same way that I was like, are you not sure it's really about dental education? I kind of also had that same thing, hadn't learned my lesson really enough the first time around. I was doing it again with voice.
It's like, please listen, please use the voice. Don't you want the voice? Don't you want Alexa in your dental surgery? Oh, you just want the templates, but what about the voice though? The voice.
Exactly. I mean, you're joking. This is almost word for word what I was doing and saying.
Oh gosh!
Are you sure it's not this? And so, And so we made that decision to move away from voice, and that has been, I mean, clearly profoundly, positively impactful. And now we have a broad enough user base to be able to consistently be getting feedback from our users and to know when we're doing things right, but also quite importantly, to know when there's things that we can be doing better. And that feels anchoring to me. So since we have had that feedback from users, I feel so much more sure of what we're doing, that we're doing something right.
I think everything that you said then could be summarized into such profound advice, in the sense that it's okay to let go of something that you're really attached to, if you know what I mean, if people are actually happy with what you're doing. I mean, you don't have to push for something that's a little like more complicated if people are already quite happy with what you're doing. So does that tie into what Kuroku is now? Can you give me a brief description of essentially what Kuroku is as an application or as a program now?
Yeah, so Kuroku will run just in Google Chrome. So it runs alongside any dental software. And what it is really intelligent templates. That's probably the most simple way I could describe it. It is using lots of sophisticated technology in the background to learn patterns in what each individual one of our users is doing time in, time out, to then optimize for reducing the amount of time they're spending on their notes. And it will do that in a variety of ways. So either it will be learning, okay, you're typing this presenting complaint in repeatedly. It will give you a clickable button for that. Okay, every time you are recording that the patient is a smoker, you're then asking a follow-up question about whether, you know, how many cigarettes they smoke. Then you might also be giving smoking cessation advice. So it will be able to make assumptions based on information you've input. So my notes, for example, because I still work clinically occasionally, by the time I have kind of clicked through my clinical findings, my discussion, my treatment plan, and my diagnoses are all totally populated, and I'll just click through any variables that are in place, such that my notes are done so much easier. They are done in 60% less time. When we speak to our dentist, that's the amount of time we're saving. And also, very importantly, it increases the quality of your notes, the thoroughness of what you're including in your notes. But I would argue, more importantly, it improves the thoroughness of the conversation you're actually having with your patient, because quite often it's giving you that guidance and that prompting to help guide you through certain things that, when you've got a million different things going on with a patient, you might not always be able to remember all those things at once.
Yeah, that sounds really quite efficient. So in saying that, talking about the templates, has the voice thing completely gone now?
Yeah. So we have stepped back from the voice entirely. I can say that now.
Say that comfortably, or somewhat comfortably, after all the effort that's been put into it. I'm going to assume it's going to be a tint of...
But I'm saying no, we are very happy to not do it anymore.
So I guess initially when you started with the voice thing, and even now with the template thing, I think a lot of people often find concerns about privacy and where their data is stored, especially in such a data-driven world that we live in at the moment.
Yeah.
How do you approach that as a company and in making, you know, people who use your program feel confident that their data is being stored in a secure way and all those sorts of things?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think because I am, like, I am a medical professional before I was anything else. That's how I've approached everything, and that's how we have built everything. So, for example, because Kuroku sits alongside your dental software, we aren't the store of your dental notes. That goes into whatever you're using for your medical records. So when you consider that, we don't actually have to have anything that's patient identifiable. It's not benefiting us, and it's not benefiting the user for that to be stored in Kuroku. So anything that is patient identifiable, so any names or dates, our AI is able to recognize that there is a name or date that's been mentioned, and it will automatically remove it from our system. So we don't have access to anything that's patient identifiable. And then obviously those notes are then copied over into your dental software, and that's where it stays attached to that patient and those patient records.
Right. Yeah. No, I guess obviously being a dentist, and as we've talked about already, shifting into the technology space with that background has clearly helped you a lot in your semi-career I think it's a career change. I want to also ask what you think the future of Kuroku looks like, because you're essentially changing the way that people approach clinical record keeping, and not necessarily even clinical, just record keeping in general. Where do you see that moving? Because it sounds like an incredibly exciting space to be in.
Yeah, so I think our vision at Kuroku is obviously it's been dentist first, and there is a huge number of dentists in the team. So it's still very, very dental focused, and I imagine it will be for the near future. But we've always built the technology with the thought that this can be applied to other fields. Because, I mean, the problems that we've described, which we as dentists face, which is essentially having to write notes over and over again, which includes a lot of repetitive information, that is not, you know, a problem felt exclusively by dentists. I think almost any professional could describe having to do that at some point. And so we have built the technology such that it can already be applied in other fields. And so we, you know, to kind of give you a few examples, we already use Kuroku internally within the team for non-dental use cases. So if we've got board meetings, things like that, we've already got workflows set up such that rather than us having to spend lots of time typing, we're able to just kind of click through and things are done far, far quicker. We've had doctors, physios who've built their own workflows. We've already had, because I mean, we're focusing on English speaking dentists. However, we've already had workflows built in completely different countries, in completely different languages, by some of our users who say, oh, I really want to be able to use this in language X. Can I translate it? And they have then translated it because our system allows them to do that. So I say all of those things to say eventually our goal is to for this to be agnostic of profession and to be able to provide this to loads of different professionals. But our more near-term focus is to really make sure that we never lose sight of who we are building the product for, and making sure it is primarily solving a problem for dentists before we think about any of that.
Yeah, that's true. I suppose you can't lose sight of your initial focus. You can try and do everything
at once and do nothing well. And once you've effectively kind of solved the problem for one group of people, so much of that will be able to translate to the next group. But if you're trying to do everything, then you're building it for no one, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with that. I normally actually ask my guests what their advice is for people who are making a career pivot, but I think you're quite unique in the sense that you actually really loved your initial job, yeah, and that your current career is essentially born out of a passion to improve,
yeah,
your initial job. But I think one of the things that I want to ask you is, how do you find balance in what you do? I mean, it's interesting to me that you still work clinically. Yeah. And how important you think doing different things is within the career path that you've chosen.
So I still do dentistry. I do a Tuesday evening most weeks. And the reason I do that is because I just genuinely actually miss seeing patients, and I miss doing dentistry. As lame as it might make me sound, I actually love doing dentistry. So, you know, I could genuinely take no paycheck home and I would still do it. I do that for, as I said, because I genuinely enjoy it. I also always want the option. I don't want to have de-skilled massively. Should I want to go back to clinical dentistry, I want that option to be there, or as open as it can be, even if I've got to, you know, do, you know, a course or whatever. But, you know, I haven't completely closed that door to myself. I also think it will make me better at being able to think, my users are dentists. If I'm able to still think like a dentist, then I will be able to make a product that is better for dentists. Not that it is by any way I'm the person doing all of product. There's a huge team of people, but I think it is good to continue thinking and experiencing the problem that caused you to start this in the first place. And then in terms of balance, I would say I actually find that quite challenging sometimes, because inevitably I want to be able to commit all of my time to the thing I'm doing. And in doing dentistry part-time, I want to be able to give 110%. And obviously I'm balancing it with other things. And so that does sometimes, you know, cause me to feel quite anxious and make sure that I am absolutely doing the best I can for the patients I'm seeing. I suppose, and then regarding balance in other settings, I suppose, in terms of work-life balance and making sure I maintain that in spite of everything I'm doing, I think dentistry is a really good starting point for that, because you do, you know, with dentistry, when you leave the surgery, if you've finished your notes, there's not a huge amount of things that you have to do after that point. It's a good, you're able to switch off. At least I was able to switch off. I can't speak for other dentists. And so I've always, even since starting Croker, I've been really quite regimented. You know, once I finished work in the evening, I might do a gym class, I might make my dinner, whatever it is. But I do really try and take that time off. And I do think that's super important.
And I'll finish off by just asking you, you know, how you think your former self when you were still in dental school would view you now, where you are.
I think probably she would be just as confused. I think she would just be, what happened? I thought you could be a dentist. What are you doing? But I think probably pretty open-minded to the fact that I've kind of gone down a slightly different route. I don't know. That's a very good question.
I thought that was an interesting question to ask you, purely because you've deviated so far off the beaten path of a dentist, which is either, I guess, be an associate, be a practice owner, specialized, academic. You know, there are quite sort of ingrained roles.
You see, aren't they? You know, practice owner if you're entrepreneurial, down the hospital route if you're going to be an academic. And I didn't see it. I didn't see anything other than those two routes. And I really did think about that even when I was at university. I think I would be so confused that I wouldn't be able to see the path of how I had got to this point. If that makes sense. Oh, how did you go from there to there? Yeah. I wouldn't be able to see the connecting dots.
Yeah, no, I think that there's that quote by Steve Jobs, isn't it? That you look back and you realize that everything sort of worked out.
He says,
but you don't know in the moment.
He says you can't connect the dots looking forward, but you can connect them looking back. No, I found that.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's a very good quote. When you said Steve Jobs quote, I was like, I should probably know this, but I definitely won't know this. But I weirdly did.
You knew it before I did, because I saw I said it to someone yesterday trying to be all profound, but clearly I'm not profound enough to remember it in the moment when I need it.
I do love it. Not ideal. Inspirational, one of those talks, like I will occasionally listen to like Steve Jobs one or J.K. Rowling if I just need a bit of, you know, a spark. So that's probably why I know it.
Thank you so much for your time, Hannah, and I'm sure that everyone who listens to this will be pretty inspired by your story. It's really positive, and I don't know if it's like an idealistic review, given that you're in a good space now.
I think I'm unfortunately always very positive, which is a good thing, but it also means that like. That I always seem to find the positive in the things that I like in things. I did it with every bit of dentistry that I was exposed to. I was like, oh, maybe I want to do endo because I love this. So that seems just to be a trait of my personality, I think.
I'm going to say I'll take that as a positive. I was going to say, I think that's a great point, purely because I think that shows that you've got grit and that, you know, you're able to get past any obstacles that come your way and not get too beat up about it, which I think kudos to you, honestly, because I think as dentists we have such a stressful job and a lot of people are unable to get past those points. And I think possibly the reason to your success so far has been that very trait of yours. So yeah,
thank you.
That's great. Awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
No problem,
Hannah.
At all. It was so lovely to meet you. And yeah, good luck with anything. If there's anything I can do, let me know. If you're ever considering exploring a dental tech company, if I can help, I will do.
And that was my chat with Hannah. I haven't quite yet taken up her offer about a dental tech company, but hopefully I will think up some ideas maybe one day. But anyways, I really enjoyed finding out about Hannah's lateral transition into the world of technology in the healthcare space, and it's really refreshing to hear her passion for dentistry is still well and truly alive. Now, if you're interested in finding out more about Kuroku, visit trykuroku.com. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please make sure to rate and subscribe to it and follow the podcast at The Inspired Pro on Instagram and visit theinspiredprofessional.com for more information. Now, if you know anyone or have any recommendations as to who would be great on the podcast, please get in touch and send them my way. As always, thanks for listening, and I'll catch you on the next one.